This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
The so-called hot killer nanny posting sexy bathtub selfies with her married IRS agent boyfriend, Banfield, before his wife is murdered in a bizarre fetish, BDSM, that's bondage and sadomasochism, plot. That's right out of a Hollywood movie. But sadly, Christine is dead. And her little girl says to the killer nanny, "Can I call you mommy?" Makes my skin crawl. And you know Christine up in heaven is flipping backflips. Wait till I show you the body cam video of the killer nanny hugging all over the baby. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us.
Then I asked him, "We're going to divorce her?" He said, "That's not what I'm thinking about." And then he explained that he was thinking about finding a way to just get rid of her for out of the picture.
Talk about a serious makeover. Let's just see. Don't need to hear it yet. See the body cam video of the nanny hyperventilating out in the front yard. Christine has about a 3-inch stab wound to her neck upstairs. Okay, there she is doing deep breathing exercises at the behest of the police, while Christine, the mommy, is upstairs with about a 3-inch knife wound to her neck. Let me see that sound one more time. Then I asked him, "Will you divorce her?" And he said, "That's not what I'm thinking about."
Then I asked him, "We're going to divorce her?" He said, "That's not what I'm thinking about." He explained that he was thinking about finding a way to just get rid of her for out of the picture.
Okay. You know, let me understand something, Dr. Bethany Marshall. I need to speak to a shrink before I even go to our investigative reporters. This is the mother that has worked a job supporting him, the IRS agent, has given birth, gets one day to sleep in, and she gets murdered. And, okay, the husband is saying he's the adult in the situation, that he's not thinking of a divorce. He's thinking of another, quote, way to get rid of her so he can bed the hot nanny. Their words, not mine. I don't think she's hot. I think she looks like, please don't show me the cleavage shot anymore. I'm tired of seeing her breasts. She looks like the devil to me. Getting rid of her after she has gone through childbirth? Really, Bethany?
You know, the nanny is not hot. Killer nanny wants to appropriate another woman's life. She wants insta life without doing all the work to get one. Just like women who slash other women's tummies open to get a fetus. They want the life, but they don't want to do the work to get it. And if killer dad thinks somebody who wants to murder his wife along with him is hot, then they are just doing the dance of the devil together, Nancy. Wife did everything for this family. She was an ER nurse. She worked. She brought home the bacon and cooked it up in a pan, and she had no appreciation from her husband. This is obviously an emotionally abusive relationship.
You know, to Mark Tate, veteran trial lawyer joining us, he is the founder of the Tate Law Group, and he shot to the forefront of the nation's consciousness during the Alex Murdaugh double murder trial, where he repeatedly took to the airways saying Murdaugh didn't do it. Okay, well, he did do it. And now we have another guy willing to just discard his wife. And he brings in the Brazilian au pair like she can be trusted about as far as you can throw her. Of course she And if you don't show me cleavage, you got to show me that mouth full of red lipstick. It just never ends. So, Mark Tate, what was he thinking? He's the adult in this scenario, and he doesn't think the nanny is going to crack when they go, oh, yeah, girl, you're going down under the jail. Or you can go home to Brazil and stay in a prison there. You can pick. He didn't think she was going to crack.
There's no honor among criminals and apparently no honor among murderers, right? So why anybody would trust a stranger like that to keep such a dark secret?
And they weren't exactly strangers, Tate. Hey, New York control room.
She was offered time served.
Well, the nanny's anal floss hanging in the IRS agent hubby's master bedroom. When I say anal floss, you know what that is, Tate, right? It's thongs that go up your rear end. She moved all of her lingerie, they're like pieces of thread, into his bedroom immediately.
There you go.
You see that?
Anal thong, anal balls. I don't know what exactly you're saying.
Anal floss.
Hey, oh, okay.
All right.
Well, that's new. I had not being someone who frequents the fetish sites, I wasn't quite familiar with anal floss. But thank you, Nancy, for educating me.
I think I made it up, but probably not. You're familiar with dental floss, right? Yeah, right here. This is anal floss.
Once a year, okay.
Do I need to explain it further?
Yeah. So she's not dead 24
hours, and Miss Thing moves in her anal floss into the mom's closet, and he's okay with that.
All right. So, right, it's a terrible story. The circumstantial evidence about this guy and the accusation against him, it's terrible. And I'm not really sure what effect, being an IRS agent is going to have on the jury. I don't think it's going to elevate their opinion of him any.
That's not what I asked you about.
What do you want to ask me about? I'm sorry, I missed the question because
I did not ask you about him being with the IRS. Put up
Tate.
If you're trying to goad me into trashing the IRS, that's not happening.
No, I'm scared of the IRS.
I don't need to pull the tiger by the tail.
You are.
You know what? Just what I'm saying is he thought she would go along with this murderous plot. She cracked
ridiculous.
After she wrote effusive letters from the jail. Hello, we read those. Offering to take the fall. You know what? Hold on. Listen to this.
Banfield, in love with Brazilian au pair Juliana Magalhães, masterminds a plan to kill his wife so intricate it sounds like the plot of a movie. Magalhães and Banfield create a fake profile using Christine's name on fetish website FetLife.com. Posing as Christine, Banfield communicating with Joseph Ryan, discussing an encounter involving restraints used on her, her clothing cut off with a knife brought by Ryan, and other violent role play.
Somebody that sounded like violent and was kind of playing the way he wanted the person to play. So then that's when he started talking to Joe. We told other people before that it was kind of part of the game where the person gets in the bedroom and then I may act like scared, like try to run or try to scream, but like, or if the person starts doing something, she would just get kind of freaked out and try to resist, but it was like part of the game. And then that's when Brenna had instructed me before, as soon as I see Joe's car, for me to call him like right away. And that's what I did.
See, it's so easy to, I don't know, make fun of this bizarre plot. But remember, the mother of the little girl asleep in bed, finally gets the morning to sleep in. The so-called, there she is, hot nanny is supposed to take the baby to the zoo. Mommy bought the tickets. She thinks, oh, thank goodness, baby Valerie's going to have a fun day at the zoo and I get to sleep for an hour. This is so great. The next thing she knows, some dude off a bondage website comes in with a knife. You know what? Let me go straight out to Gigi McKelvey joining us, investigative reporter, star of Pretty Lies and Alibis podcast. Gigi, it is laughable. This plot where the husband, the IRS agent, and the nanny plan to just, you know what? You tell the plot. Because it's almost laughable if I didn't have to remember Christine bleeding out in the floor with a 3-inch knife stab to her neck by her own husband. Tell me what happened.
Yeah, the plot was to essentially catfish Joe Ryan on the FetLife website, where people go to find willing partners, consensual partners to act out these fantasies. And they used Christine's laptop to communicate with him at times when she was home. So later on, when there was an investigation, and Brendan, being an IRS agent, a federal agent, knew there would be one, it would show her at home when these communications took place. And it did work with some detectives who thought it was Christine communicating. But they positioned themselves in certain spots. The au pair was in the cul-de-sac with the child, waiting on Joe Ryan to come in the house. And he was told to bring specific things like a knife. If I resist, you keep going. It's part of the act. When he walks in the house, Juliana calls Brendan, who's waiting at a nearby McDonald's, and he goes home, goes upstairs, sees Joe Ryan on top of his wife. This is exactly what Brendan and the au pair told him she wanted, you know, lying. But the wife looks at her husband thinking, I've been saved. And she says, Brendan, he has a knife. He turns around and shoots Joe Ryan in the head, doesn't kill him, and proceeds to stab his wife in the neck 7 times with 1 superficial wound. Now, she also, before she got stabbed, she told the au pair to call 911. The plan was to call much later. Juliana, not thinking in the moment, calls 911, where you can allegedly hear Joe Ryan moaning in the background. Brendan gives her a hand signal to hang up. She shoots Joe Ryan in the chest, killing him. And then they make the 911 call that they meant to. But here's the thing. When 911 told them to check to see if Christine was still breathing, she was. And their voices, Nancy, when they tell each other, not the 911, she's still breathing. It was not a, oh, there's hope, she's still breathing. It was a, oh my gosh, she's still breathing. Ultimately, Joe Ryan pronounced dead on scene. Christine died at the hospital just a little bit later.
Dave Mack joining us, Crime Stories investigative reporter. Where was baby Valerie during all this?
She actually was in the basement when Brendan Banfield and Juliana Magalhães, when they came together at the house before Banfield goes upstairs, they enter into the basement and they tell the little girl, stay right here. Do not come out. So she was in the basement.
Hey, can you check him out?
Yeah, I got more units here, but we'll check him out.
Yeah. Dave Mack, what is the IRS agent husband Banfield doing in the floor?
You know, Nancy, he's carrying on a good bit, in shock, maybe. I'm not exactly sure what he was trying to pull off. But, you know, this is, he's still in the bedroom where everything has taken place. And the officers, the paramedics, they're all trying to get him out. And that's when, you know, he was standing up just fine. And then as they get ready to take him out, that's when he hits all fours and, you know, acts like he can't really do anything. But then he was able to get back up and walk out.
Oh, my goodness. He's in so much grief. Let's see that one more time, please.
Hey, can you check him out?
Yeah, I got more units here, but we'll check him out.
He's starting to break down a little bit.
Meryl Streep, he ain't. Okay, Mark Tate, I guess you do tell all your criminal clients, be a good actor or don't even try. Did you see that? He's like, oh, I'm dizzy. What? Everything's going dark. Let me lay down gently on all fours. He didn't fall over. Like when you faint, you just fall over and you might hit your head. He's like, first hand, second hand, back leg, other back leg. I'm dizzy.
Yeah, well, it was not very well acted.
It was awful.
Of course I saw it. You just showed it to me. It's crazy looking. It was made up looking. It's histrionic. It doesn't fit. But, you know, I do remember, and you probably do as well, when Fred Tokars paid and had his wife Sarah murdered in Atlanta. And I will never forget that photograph of him at the funeral where he was clearly in a great deal of, you know, emotional pain. And so no matter what this guy acts like, you know, the jury has the case now. And I believe
he was
the prosecution
not in emotional pain. Put up Tate.
No, he's not here. But
Fred
it's possible
Tokars,
to be in a yes.
Fred Tokars was not in emotional pain. He hit on
he
me in my very first plea and arraignment calendar as a Fulton assistant district attorney. I'm like, who is that? And they went, that's an Atlanta municipal court judge. I'm like, well, he just hit on me. Isn't he married? Isn't that a wedding band? I don't want to hear about Fred Tokars. May he rot in hell. He's dead.
I think he's dead.
Emotional pain. Oh,
well,
he may have been crying because they were on to him and he knew it.
That's real. But this guy's display was, I don't think, real. It didn't have any credibility. The way he kind of fell, it just looked like a histrionic display. I don't think that he's a very good criminal. And I think that his plan here didn't work out well. And I've
it was too intricate. It was too intricate. Let's listen to, let's go back to the scene. Now, remember, guys, what you're seeing right here is body cam at the scene. His wife is dead in the other room. And according to the nanny and the forensic evidence, he just stabbed her. It's about 2.5 to 3 inches deep wound in the neck. The woman he married, the woman that gave birth to his child, the woman that takes care of that beautiful home, who worked to support him, the whole shebang. Oh, no, I don't want that. I want the Brazilian au pair. Let's kill Christine. Let's go back to the scene.
Okay.
There.
We're gonna have to get him
out
of here.
Yeah, I know.
Can you give him a second? Don't touch anything else.
I'm not. Let me change my gloves out. You can get him out of here. Knife's there, guns are on the bed.
Oh my stars. Is he still on all fours on the floor? Yes, he is. And I think I noticed he picked a spot of floor that was carpeted. Just in case he accidentally fell. Okay, all I can say to Dr. Bethany Marshall is PTL. Praise the Lord for body cam. Bethany, let's watch some more.
I got you.
We're going to take him and stick him in a freezer.
Yeah, I got to
hook
him up, guys.
Having a breakdown?
Yeah.
Can you help him? Just be with him?
Yep.
Whenever they called us, whenever what's your name?
Brendan. Fairfield.
Say. Brendan with Vienna.
Easy.
I'm sorry, say it again.
So you with Vienna?
My office is in Vienna, correct. Did you call my office?
No.
I need to call my manager at some point.
It's the least of our worries right now, man.
I need to call my manager. He's talking about calling his manager at the IRS when his wife has just been stabbed. And you know the part I love the most about that, Dr. Bethany Marshall? It's at the beginning. Do you see the officer going, indicating Banfield does not know his wife is dead? Oh, yes, he does. And Banfield's still laying
yes,
on all fours.
But you know, Nancy, also the guy that's sort of going like this, they sound very nonchalant, these first responders. And it tells me that although they're going through the motions and doing the right thing, they kind of know that he's being a drama queen, Nancy. You know, there's a word for what Brendan is doing. It's called malingering. Malingering is when you make up a fictitious or fake illness to get out of some consequence, like pretending you have brain cancer so you don't have to go to jail, or that you had amnesia so you don't remember shooting your wife. In this case, that he is fainting and that he's so distraught and therefore not responsible for any of his actions in the moment.
Banfield and au pair Magalhães carry on an affair for months, creating the murder plan after telling Magalhães he wants to get rid of his wife and divorce is not an option because it costs too much money and he doesn't want to share custody of their 4-year-old daughter. Banfield comes up with a home invasion, giving Magalhães a gun and instructing her to call Christine's phone when Ryan enters the home. Then, call Banfield at a McDonald's near the home. Banfield changes his routine leading up to the murders, so it would not seem out of routine for him to be at the McDonald's that morning.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
And what's your name and what's going on?
My name is Brendan Banfield. I'm a federal agent. This is my house. There's somebody here. I shot him. He stabbed her.
But
I was trying to
just like
pressure.
Yes. I mean, it covered enormous wounds and
he just like this to me. Wait. And then I stopped and then we were both just listening to that sound. That was the real sound we were listening to.
What did it sound like?
For me, I mean, slapping.
So after this elaborate plot where the nanny and the husband secretly signed the wife up on a fetish website, lure a guy there, tell him to attack her, the two of them, nanny and husband, walk in to the sound of slapping. Dave Mack, what was the slapping that she describes?
That was what was taking place upstairs, Nancy. And all I can think of is you got to remember that Joe Ryan is there on a what he believes is consensual. Christine Panfield is shaken out of bed. And I'm guessing it's pretty rough up there right about now with her fighting for her life and Ryan thinking it's all part of the game. The smacking. A knife.
Or is it him slapping her? The nanny makes it very clear. She said it several times. I just played you one time that she says she hears slapping. So is this part of the sex play, beating her, slapping her into submission? Can you imagine, Dr. Bethany, her, Christine, waking up? And some strange guy's in your room with a knife and a rope and a chain and starts slapping you in the face?
I can't imagine how terrifying that and all the ensuing events, your own husband climbing on top of you and plunging a knife into your neck. It sounds to me like Brendan and Killer Nanny set up this sort of rape scene so carefully and so meticulously that they told Joe, slap, you know, I want to be slapped a lot. So that by the time the prosecutor questions Killer Nanny, she goes, oh, I heard a lot of slapping. I mean, that's how well thought out this devious plan was.
To Gigi McKelvey, Pretty Lies and Alibis. Gigi, do I understand this correctly that Ryan comes in lured there for what he thinks is a consensual BDSM act on Christine? She sees her husband come to the door and thinks he's saving her, and instead he shoots Ryan and then he stabs her.
Yeah, that's what happened. Christine told him, Brendan, he has a knife, and then she tells Juliana to call 911. At that point, Joe Ryan is shot in the head, doesn't die yet, and then he gets on top of Christine and starts stabbing her. She had a total of 6 penetrating stab wounds and 1 superficial, but the deepest being 2.5 inches. So yeah, that's exactly what happened. You know, can you imagine what she thought, thinking, oh my gosh, I am saved, only to see your husband on top of you, probably seconds later, stabbing you in the neck.
Dr. Kendall Crowns is joining us now. Dr. Crowns, thank you for being with us. Crowns is Chief Medical Examiner, Tarrant County. That's Fort Worth. Never a lack of business there. He is a star of a hit podcast, Mayhem in the Morgue. He is an esteemed lecturer at the Burnett School of Medicine at TCU and has handled literally thousands of autopsies, all sorts, accident, suicide, natural causes, unexplained, and of course, homicide. Dr. Crowns, could you explain those gruesome injuries to this young mom's throat?
Certainly. So she was stabbed in the neck with a knife, and they're saying it's going in about 2 to 3 inches. And what it is in your neck, the carotid and jugular vein sit probably about 1/4 inch, a few millimeters underneath your skin and a muscle on this side of your neck called the sternocleidomastoid. these two vessels, the internal jugular, the carotid artery, are major blood vessels taking blood to your brain. And if they get hit by a knife, they'll just start bleeding, and you can bleed out within minutes of being hit in the neck from a stab wound hitting these two vessels. And then you only have about a few minutes to survive after that unless someone puts pressure on it. If you go a little more to the center, you'll hit the trachea, which is the windpipe that takes air from your mouth to your lungs. And it's also where the vocal cords sit. So if the trachea gets hit, you can have the vocal cords damaged and you won't be able to speak.
Let me understand something, Dr. Kendall Crowns. If the stab wounds, and there were multiple stab wounds, one being 2.5 inches deep, how could she continue to talk? She was dying.
So I question that she's being able to talk. I mean, that is a statement made by him. I personally feel like she's probably had her trachea-laryngeal region hit, getting these vocal cords hit, and she's probably sitting there bleeding out and gagging on her own blood.
You know, Dr. Kendall Crowns, isn't it true that medical examiners, like yourself, take into account not only what the body of the victim tells them, but the surrounding circumstances? For instance, I prosecuted a guy, millionaire, for the murder of his wife. The house burned down with her in it, and he miraculously escaped. Her body showed a blow to the head and other bruises across her body. She did not die, but just because of the fire. The medical examiner took into account that all of the husband's family photos of his family, not hers, and all of his suits and all of his shoes had been taken 2 or 3 days before and put in a warehouse. So they were all saved. I found the suits at the dry cleaner, by the way. I went to 8 dry cleaners before I found them, but I found them. And also he called the weather channel, to check on would it rain the day that coincidentally the fire broke out. The medical examiner took in extrinsic evidence into account before determining it was a homicide. Do you do that?
Yes. So you can't, we always say you can't autopsy in a vacuum, which means you can't just look at the body and make a determination of cause and manner of death. You have to take into account medical records, paramedic reports, death investigators reports, police reports. All this information combined is how you make the final decision for cause and manner of death. And the problem is when you get a witness statement like your case with the fire, that doesn't make sense with the autopsy findings, then you have to tell the investigators and the police, you know, things aren't adding up. I need more information. And then more investigation is done and you'll get more information showing that this individual may have been murdered or a homicide. And the thing is you'll get range of fire issues with gunshot wounds where they're saying it's contact and it's obviously farther away. And if you can't get a witness statement that makes sense, you just have to go with the information you have and make a opinion and make a judgment call on manner of death.
So, Dr. Kendall Crowns, you stated that based on Christine's body alone, you find it very, very difficult to believe, as do I, as she's literally choking on her own blood and bleeding out. You find it very hard to believe that she could speak. Now, when I put a witness on the stand or I argue something to the jury, I try to determine the veracity of that statement. Like, can it be believed? What's my source? Are there witnesses to it? So, number one, forensically, I don't think that she could speak, but I want you to consider the source as you did. This is coming from the husband, and he says, Dr. Kendall Crowns, you may need to buckle your seatbelt so you don't just fall over and hit your head. That as she was dying, she was able to speak, and that she apologized for all of her cheating and whoring around town. That's what he says. Listen.
Banfield claims his dying wife, stabbed in the neck 7 times, as deep as 2.5 inches, was able to speak a lot before emergency responders arrive. Banfield claims Christine apologized to him and that she loved him. Holding his hand on her neck wound, she says she is bleeding out and she was sorry.
You were there, and it sounds like there was a lot of blood loss.
Yes.
And so I think that she died of blood loss. Her airway was actually okay. I'll call the medical examiner, of course, and we'll do an autopsy and make sure we know for certain. But
I was trying to just like pressure.
I mean, those were enormous wounds, and you know, it's not.
There were so many.
You did everything that was possible. It's not a survivable injury.
What did you see that at the end? Tate, again, I know you've got a new courtroom set up in your office and you have all of these experts counseling your clients, but really, you need to tell them if they can't be effective criers on the spot, just don't do it at all. Do you hear that? It sounds like a little yap dog, like maybe a chihuahua barking in the car next to you at the red light. Did you hear that?
Yes, I heard it. So he's a terrible actor. The case against him is awful. I guess John Carroll, the defense lawyer, I think someone suggested that he's going to be dealt with subsequent to any conviction with an ineffective assistance of counsel claim by Banfield. You know, these little things that we're seeing certainly belie his sincerity. And these types of things are exactly the hooks that a jury does look for to make them not like a person. And so even though you perfected the bark, Nancy, which I think is fabulous and probably could be effective for you in some closing argument, I think that here just playing that tape is going to make a jury think this guy is not good and that he is a faker.
Just imagine this, your last image before you die with your daughter downstairs is your husband on top of you stabbing you in the neck. Now, you heard the physician at the ER telling the husband, Banfield, that there was no coming back. And he started crying. But yet, he says that with multiple stab wounds to the neck, as deep as nearly 3 inches, she apologized for basically being a big hoe. Listen.
She was like, why'd you do this? Call 911. And I said, Juliana, specifically, Juliana, call 911.
What did you hear her saying to Brendan as he was stabbing her?
He was stabbing her, and then she was just telling him, let me go. I'm gonna die anyways. I'm gonna bleed to death. She was just, leave me here. Let me die. And then he was telling her, I can't. I don't know why he said I can't.
How did Christine Banfield's blood come to be on Joe Ryan's arms and hands?
Brendan did.
Do I have this correct to Dave Matt, Crime Stories investigative reporter, that Ryan goes on to state that she apologized for all of her cheating and said she loved him? She didn't cheat. He cheated.
Exactly. And Nancy, yet again, he's claiming that she apologizes and says, I love you, but we can't figure out how that's even possible with the injuries she is suffering, Nancy, yet, and nobody else could hear it. Just this is Banfield's own testimony that she said, I'm sorry.
Okay. Dr. Bethany Marshall, why is it when one spouse is cheating, and not just cheating with the au pair that's been invited to live in the home right under the wife's nose, that they blame the other spouse with cheating? Christine was not cheating. She was trying to take care of the baby, take care of the house, take care of it all. Supermom. She didn't even have time to sleep, much less sleep. Why does the cheating spouse accuse the innocent spouse of cheating?
You know, not only is it the cycle of abuse, Nancy, but it's a simple projection. He's projecting into her what he's doing, which is he is cheating. Nancy, there's no way to know this, but sit with us for a second. I would imagine that Brendan and the nanny had erotic fantasies about killing Christine. I think this murder plot was something that was incorporated into their sex lives, talked about. They had, I think, a very imaginative sexual aspect to this, where maybe they even fantasized about him stabbing her in the throat, or that she was a cheater, or that she was having sex with other guys, and that the had it coming to her. And then they're going to move into the master bedroom. She's going to bring her anal floss with her, and that the baby's going to love the nanny. And you, when you think of sociopathy, Nancy, you know, it's a disorder of detachment. They're not attached to Christina. They're not attached to the baby. They have no idea that the baby's not going to bond with nanny. What they are attached to is their sick, erotic sexual fantasies, their sexual excitement with each other, and incorporating Christine and this poor Joe guy that was set up into this like makeup grizzly fantasy world.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Apparently, the nanny, not only, he was pled guilty for it with a cheap deal. Now, Banfield is facing a jury. Not only did she completely snow Christine, so Christine had no idea what was going on, the cops fell for it. Wait till you see the way they pampered the killer nanny while Christine is laying in her own blood inside, and she's got the baby calling her, the nanny, mommy. Okay, watch this.
I'm sorry.
Hi.
What's going on this morning?
I was going out.
It's okay, take a breath. It's okay. Take a minute, okay?
We need some water.
Oh, you're fine.
I was going out with this woman. Her daughter.
Okay, yep, yeah. She's sitting on there.
And then I forgot our lunch to bring it. And I was coming back to the house to get the lunch.
Tate, really? Did you see the trembling of the hands? She's like, okay, what was I supposed to say next? Oh yeah, I forgot the lunch. Oh, there she is hyperventilating, fake hyperventilating. And the cops are like all over here. Her, do you need snacks? Do you need a comfy chair? Deep breaths, Miss Lady. I mean, really? Do you see her trying to come up with her story and it's caught on body cam? I'm so happy, Tate.
You're happy? I'm not that surprised, really, that cops would try to be nice to her, because, you know, they don't know exactly what's going on. If they start being rough on her now, she might clam up. And so I'm not always an expert on police tactics. However, I do know that they approach certain people that they haven't decided what their involvement is with a certain amount of forgiveness in what they're saying in order to keep them talking. And here it in fact worked, because not only did they get her to tell what possibly really happened that's before the jury to be decided right now, but also got her to turn on this man.
Okay. Yeah. Let's do it again.
Sir, if you need anything, we'll be here for a little bit.
I feel a little bit better.
Okay. Who, for you? Yeah.
You're okay.
I'm so dizzy.
Does anyone have a bottle of water we can get her?
I have orange juice. My car is drinking a little bit, but she's my drink naturally.
When you guys get there, there's comfy couches. We can get you guys some snacks if you want. There's a bathroom there you can use. Okay, we can put the TV on for a little bit.
Try and see if we can get you a drawing. Get some coloring books and stuff.
Oh, they definitely got coloring books there. They got toys. It's okay.
I know.
It's okay. It's okay. It's okay to be scared. Okay? You're going to be with all right? You guys are going to take care of each other. Okay? And then I'm sure they're going to have some very nice people there that will talk with you. Okay, they'll help you feel better.
She just shot. She admits on the stand, under oath, hand on Bible, she shot Joseph Ryan dead, stood there while Christine was stabbed in the neck, and she's getting snacks and comfy chair. Okay, and then I know Christine is just turning over in her grave. She keeps hugging and clinging to Christine's baby.
When did first begin to refer to you as her mommy?
I do not remember when exactly.
Sally Fayez with the Victim Services describes Christine's daughter finding out her mother is dead. The 4-year-old asks Magalies, "Can I call you mommy now?" Valerie then asks if the two would get married, to which Magalies says, "I wish."
to Dr. Bethany Marshall, what is it about this video of the hugging and the slobbering over the baby? And hey, when Dr. Bethany's talking, could you please show the nanny when she has another hyperventilation episode? She's hanging her nose out the squad car. What is she smelling? Murder? What is so skin crawling about her hugging all over the baby?
It's so skin crawling because she's exploiting the baby to gain sympathy from the officers. If she really loved that baby, she would not have participated in killing the baby's mother. This is like a mommy dearest moment where a parent or a nanny uses a child like a prop so that they can act like they're attached, whereas we know deep down she's not attached at all. She won't be attached to Brendan. She wasn't attached to Christine, to Joe, who's already been murdered lying upstairs. She's not going to attach to this little baby. This baby might as well just be a doll. You know, Nancy, it's often not what people say when they talk to the police. It's what they don't say. She says she's hyperventilating. She's putting a good show on. But you know what she doesn't say? This poor little girl, she had such a good relationship with her mommy. Her mommy's upstairs. What can we do to keep her safe and protected? It's not about the little girl. It's all about killer nanny.
And consequently, to Dave Mack, it's about the husband. Because I do believe that much of the killer nanny. I don't think she's got the wherewithal to come up with a plot on her own. She just wanted to get married to the IRS agent hubby. That's all she wanted. He wanted the murder, Dave Mack, and I think that's very clear. Oh, hey, Dave, what can you tell me about him, the husband, ordering triple soundproof windows so the neighbors could not hear the wife scream during the murder?
Nancy, it's unbelievable the effort that he went to. This goes down to the planning stages of thinking about, hey, man, somebody might hear the yelling, screaming, whatever, outside. So he orders these triple pane windows that even the guy, the window people talking about this say, this goes well beyond trying to save money with, you know, temperature inside the house or outside. This goes to a whole new level of cover up. And Nancy, we even went so far as Brendan Banfield going upstairs, yeah, and sending Magalia's out in the park in the road. And he goes up there and starts yelling and screaming at the top of his lungs to see if she could hear it. And she said, I couldn't really tell what was being said, could only hear a little bit. So yeah, triple pane windows did the trick.
They were called triple glazed windows he had installed. So Tate, you think that was just a coinkydink? A coincidence that the husband
had
these guys come out, triple glazed windows, and then had the nanny go up and scream at the top of her lungs, and he waited outside to see if he could hear her. They were testing the windows to make sure the neighbors could not hear her screaming during the murder.
Yeah, none of this is good. This is some of the worst evidence, I think, circumstantial evidence that I've seen piled up in a long time.
You're the defense lawyer. You're supposed to be saying something like, it really cuts down your electric bill.
Well, it does. They're very efficient, and they're used in places sometimes. But they are efficient. However, having somebody scream so you can figure out whether you hear them, I think that's, again, circumstantial evidence that looks like a plot to kill. And, you know, once again, if you're going to commit a crime, if you're going to get up to the edge, then don't bring somebody with you to testify how bad you've been. So that's what this guy did here.
In the last hours, the jury has returned a verdict of guilty on the IRS agent husband that masterminded a bizarre sex fetish scheme wherein his wife ends up dead. All I have to say is, hey, jury, you got it right, but what took so long? Nancy Grace signing off. Goodbye, friend. This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.